out to everybody. And thank y'all so much again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, I'm not in here alone. I'm in here trying to stay alive, coughing and wheezing with my wheezing friend, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, if my voice sounds a little bit weird, I apologize. There is a lot of pollen and ragweed and whatever in the air. And man, my sinuses have been jacked up all week. I feel like I got this head cold that I can't shake. Even though I've been popping Claritin and different types of allergy medicine, it suppresses some of it, but it's not fixing it.
It's crazy. And didn't you tell me that this is like one of the worst years in one of the worst areas?
I was just reading in online that Dallas is one of the worst cities to live in if you have bad allergies. And one of the best cities to live in the United States if you have allergies is Buffalo, New York. But, you know, like you've brought up several times off air, like you would think after living in an area your whole life that you would become more acclimated to the stuff in the air. But I guess not, because when I go snowboarding every year in Colorado and New Mexico and stuff, I feel great, right? If I go down to the coast, I feel pretty good. Mm-hmm. I was just in Alabama and Mississippi last summer. Felt great. I get home. My allergies, especially this time of year, this is the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a big, giant nose, and it sucks up all the pollen, folks. Even though only one side works, the other side has got too much scar tissue.
Have you ever thought about getting that broken?
I've thought about it. It's been broken multiple times.
I'm surprised it stays on when you sneeze still, but go ahead.
I thought about it, but then I was like, I'll probably wait until I'm older and less active, because I'm afraid I still might have a couple nose breaks left in me, and then I just undo it.
Older? Really?
Older, yeah.
And less active? Like, what? Dude, just get it fixed and stop, okay? Peepaw, just go ahead and get in there and get it taken care of and quit postponing it.
Like a rhinoplasty?
Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about cosmetic. I just want to be able to breathe, right?
No, they just got to take that wood chisel and knock a hole in the back of it so it opens back up to your sinuses where you can breathe again.
Yeah, well, and then I was afraid, though, if I did that, then I'd be breathing up even more pollen.
Yeah, well, that might be.
I don't know. It might be. Like, it's so bad that, when I get up in the mornings, there's, a thin film all over the top of my car.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, that is pollen.
I usually go out and take a credit card, scrape it up, and do me a line of that stuff before I get going every morning.
I see it floating on people's swimming pools and stuff.
Yes.
But, spring is almost
here. Other than that, spring has sprung in our nose. But other than that, everything's been doing great. We've dodged more of the storms. Everything is awesome. I hope y'all are really interested in some craziness today. For the main part, I'm going to be talking about some more scientists, much like Stanley Meyer, that could have possibly come to a negative end because of their inventions, because of their research, because of things that they were drawn into. But before that, I'm going to hit Mr. Filson with something that I know is near and dear to his heart, a possible Jersey Devil encounter near Batstow Village, New Jersey, homie.
Let's hear it.
It says, I've lived in southern New Jersey all my life and naturally have heard all the stories about the Jersey Devil. And I haven't believed all of them, but I do believe that the Jersey Devil or something cryptid is out there. In the summer of 2006, some friends of mine and I took a ride to the Pine Barrens, which was only about a 30-minute drive from where we were. We weren't looking for anything in particular, but we were hoping that we would see something along the lines of proof, if you will, of the existence of the Jersey Devil. We were on Bulltown Road near Batstow Village, where we had heard of a lot of sightings and some strange things going on around this area.
Is Bulltown Road next to Old Town Road?
I'm a guessing so.
Okay,
I'm
just wondering.
I'm thinking it's got to be Bulltown. I thought it was going to be near Heifer Avenue, but it's not Heifer Avenue. It might be Old Town
Road. It's Heifer.
Heifer. That's it. Yeah, the Heifer. So it says, of course, as we were driving, we passed an old abandoned house, thought nothing of it, right? And after a while of not seeing much, aside from deer and an occasional owl, we decided to turn around. As we went by that old house, we saw what appeared to be bright green eyes peering out a window. Armed with just flashlights, we began to drive up to the house. But then the eyes disappeared. Next, a noise caught the attention of me and my friend who was in the front seat with me. She shone her flashlight in time for us to see something swoop over the car. Now, by the time we could react to it, nothing was around. We went outside to investigate, but all that could be found were hoof prints in the sandy soil. These prints were too big to be deer and too small to be a horse. So as far as what swooped over the car, well, it was dark in color and very large, larger than any bird that I know of. Thanks, L.
Huh.
So, look, it doesn't really say, it doesn't, you know, it could have been a buzzard, right. It could have been, this all could easily be coincidences, right? There's just a hoof print that looked, if it's in sand, maybe it was something, it appears bigger. You know, who really knows? But it is interesting that they said that they noticed the green lights from the eyes in the window without ever shining a flashlight or no reflection or anything. Just noticed that's what drew them to the house to start with.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Very strange. The stories of the Jersey Devil, they vary so much. It's a very unusual cryptid. That's why it's one of my favorites, right?
It is odd. And not just that, but we usually have a pretty good folklore or lock on a lot of the old stuff. Whereas this, it is like a mixture. It's almost like a chimera. Like we've heard crazy stories from the start of what this might be, right? Mm-hmm. It's a child or it's, you know, it's a cursed witch. So there's all of this stuff that it could possibly be. It is interesting.
Very interesting. Also very interesting. Cam, you're familiar with like the Humboldt County area of Northern California?
Yes, sir. Up there by the Redwoods, right?
Yeah, up there. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, me and my wife have been there. It's very beautiful.
That's where they filmed Star Wars, the Return of the Jedi.
Is it?
When they were racing the speeder bikes through all that stuff. I believe that was up there.
Yeah, and what was the other one? What was the documentary? Murder Mountain?
Yeah, up there that was good.
And then there was the other one that was called like Sasquatch, but it wasn't really about Sasquatch. It was about these pot farmers.
Yeah. That's Humboldt County sounds like it's a wild place.
It is a wild place. And this story comes from there. Check this out. It says, my husband just purchased a brand new metal detector in 1999. And we had never made a hike across the street from our cabin before. We chatted and agreed to try out both hiking and taking turns using the new detector. I told him we could look for an old gold miner's treasure stash, perhaps. Really, the canyon had been logged in the late 1800s for redwoods, and we knew even finding some old logger's things could also be a lot of fun, too. So, we had a good breakfast on a Saturday morning and took our happy female Dalmatian along by a leash heading west on a paved road. I had been watching this side creek destination for months on my drives in and out of the woods. It seemed like the perfect natural access point because I knew the acreage across the street was private owned and was a little bit steep. There is at least 1,400 acres and all of it faces north, which follows parallel to the paved road. I had seen some deer in the mornings up this Thread Creek Canyon and it was very quiet there. Some neighbors lived on that side of the road, but only down by the pavement. And the whole canyon is so quiet that it would reveal sounds from very far away. One could tell the activity of which neighbors were coming home from town or leaving, etc. So we began our hike at the point of this unnamed creek, marveled by no hunting signs. There was nothing that said private property or to keep out like lots of other creeks in the area did. So we proceeded on past a few ponds down the road that drains under the pavement to a lower main creek that flows out to the Pacific Ocean. We were keeping respectfully quiet, and my husband was wearing the headphones that were attached to the detector. I was enjoying the smells of the redwoods and big leaf maples and looking at my dog just enjoying her walk. It's always wet on the ground, with thick stuff to hike on, but the understory is pretty sparse in this area because the height of the mountain blocks a lot of the sunshine. It's always kind of dark. We're accustomed to the steep, slippery terrain on our side of the road, too, and we dress in layers for the cold, and sometimes there's too much sun or Pacific winds. Some granite grains and many thick needles of the redwoods to hike on makes for quiet hiking, too, unless you snap a small branch. Anyways, about 20 minutes after through our hike, I was looking up the sides of the creek ahead because there were larger rock boulders and some fallen trees to help in picking out a good hike zone for us to go through. My Dalmatian was always good off leash on these hikes, and I took her all over different spots of California because I knew I could trust her. When I asked my husband if he was enjoying his detector, I noticed he could hear me without even removing his headphones. He seemed like he was already comfortable with the new toy, and he was busy adjusting knobs to read for gold while looking to me for direction and the destination. So I described and pointed the fire-scarred trees up the slope might be a good place to reach. He agreed that that would be fine. I could already tell he was not able to use his detector, though while needling to scramble up the creek climb, it was very steep in some places, and he'd have to take his focus off the device to make sure he didn't fall. I was prepared to hold a machine while he would be picking his route up the creek. We were committed on our way from flatter bottom ground to an ascending slope. All of a sudden, we heard a huge growl. The sound made us stop mid-stride. All three of us immediately checked to our left. This is where the sound had come from. This would be to the east in direction. I immediately asked my husband, "Did you hear that?" He was still just staring in that direction, and his mouth was open, but he did not say much, just a gesture. It was clear to me that he had heard the growling sound and the vibration of it that had come to my high ribs and around my heart area. I've never heard this yowl before, but everything in my mind told me that that is Bigfoot. And he's letting you know that you're entering his grounds, perhaps his hunting grounds. When we checked to the right and still not one bit of movement or any sounds, my dog was checking around just the same as we were. I thought the area seemed even quieter now. I talked to my husband with only my eyebrows and facial expressions. He was looking back to the left, higher and lower. He had been a soldier in the army, so I kind of relied on him to tell me if there was any danger ahead. But I felt strangely interested in reaching the point above, so I eventually just started hiking again. We just hiked straight up the creek and reached those burned down trees, which the first growth of redwood stumps with fire scars were. The area was quiet, almost too quiet. It felt creepy and shadowy for such an early part of the day. We had stopped all of our conversation. My dog was even walking quiet, not wanting to pull in the leash or wanting to wander off. We took a moment to discuss where we were heading next, when suddenly there was an obvious flat grade in the east direction. It made all the steep hiking worth it, as now we were able to just head east far too easily now. We had found an old logging road, I guess. It was completely covered in fallen branches and needles and leaves of maples. My husband enjoyed using his detector on the road. At one point in the road, we had to crawl through an area of growth. The tunnel was the size of a mountain lion or maybe wild boar, so it was a bit creepy knowing that we're using something's footpath. I don't like guns on hikes, and this was above the point where our own cabin down below would be. Another reason I did not want to shoot anything in the inhabited areas, I'm not one for that. I don't like not knowing how far the bullet would travel if I perhaps missed my shot. You can see to the edge of the slope below, but not all the way down. Anyways, we kept moving on and on, trying to forget what we heard. After a while, it took us two or three more hours, I noticed I heard a strange howling sound. I don't think there's any wolves around this area. We continued on our hike and headed back to our cabin, picking up our pace, and we had gotten back in the early afternoon. Now, to this day, me and my husband were not sure what we heard. There's not supposed to be grizzly bears in this area of California, but that doesn't rule out the possibility of one still being there. Didn't sound much like a mountain lion. I did notice a strange smell of wet fur, and I've seen numerous other shows talking about Bigfoot, skunk apes, and things of the sort have a distinct odor. Is that what we had encountered? Like I said, we never saw anything. We never saw any footprints, but we definitely heard things. And our dog did too. Thank you for all you do, Patty. So I've been to Humboldt County, California, in that area. Me and my wife were lucky enough to drive up there, and it is amazing. But it is thick. Like I, if you haven't been there, you may not truly appreciate it because of all the trees. It is dark and it's wet, and there's ferns everywhere. And
it looks like a monster should be there.
It does. Absolutely, it does. There was a Sasquatch film a couple years ago that was like filmed in that area. And I don't remember what the name of it was, but it was pretty creepy. But like, how do you explain someone? They definitely heard it. She heard it. Her husband heard it. And they know the dog heard it. They heard some eerie howling. You know, there's not really supposed to be grizzlies in California anywhere, I think. You know, I mean, even though it's on their state flag, they're not supposed to be there. But it doesn't mean that they're not there, because there's not supposed to be grizzlies in Colorado, but yet Adam Greentree has photos and videos of their one in the San Juan Mountains.
Yeah.
You know, so just because something is not supposed to be there doesn't mean that it was. But, you know, they don't seem to think it was a bear. but yet they heard it. You know, I was just having a discussion with Professor Powers the other day. You know, these people, are they imagining it? Is it some kind of demonic force that's manifesting it? That, you know, people hear voices, people hear things. Or is it something flesh and blood? Is it something physical? Was there a Sasquatch warning them? I mean, they obviously didn't all imagine it.
I have a problem with the fact that, and this is for me, I don't care about anybody else as far as like their experience, but it's one of those things that unless I actually physically see what's making that sound, I'm not going to attribute it to something that I think it might be.
Yeah, but it's hard not to, right? Like you sit back and you rack your brain like, what the heck could that have been?
But also go online and like we've said before, look up video of bobcats making funky noises and foxes. And there's a bunch of animals that can make some very odd noises that you might misconstrue as something else. So unless I see it make it. Now, that's not to say that I wouldn't want to go back and go, well, this is where that sound came from. I'm going to go back in there later to see if I could see, is there anything on the ground or any tracks or, you know what I mean? Any kind of evidence of anything still being around that area.
I agree. And you know, we talk about all the time, it depends on what day you ask me, do I think it's real? And here's what I'll say. On this particular day, I don't really have an answer. I don't know. But I will say that there's all these people that have reached out to us over the decade of doing this. And they got these secret spots, these gifting trees. They got Area X. Oh, we'll take you up there sometime. But you know what? I've never actually been invited. And I've never actually seen any concrete proof. And if all these people have such concrete proof, why aren't they coming forward? Right? You could make millions and millions of dollars if you could concrete proof.
Oh, you're talking about like even those places where people have their homes, like that they know there's family units living around.
Well, that's the claim.
Yeah.
But it's always hearsay. Or there's always some circumstance whenever you see something on the Travel Channel or somebody goes up there with the film crew, something happened, some bad weather rolled in, the coronavirus happened. There's always an excuse. I'm sorry. But it's, you know, I want to see one.
You're just dying to see one.
I'm one of the guys. I gotta have proof, man. If I don't see one, I'm just not gonna believe it.
It is tough. The older and the more we do it, that I'm like, how have we not got anything concrete?
And
to be there. I want it to be out there.
Bad.
But I'm with you. I want to see something. I guess.
And don't think I'm poo-pooing on the stories, because I love the stories and I am a believer and I do want to believe, but
I want to see it for myself.
I just got to go.
You know what? We're going to have to go where they claim they are. We're going to have to go out and try to really see if we can't have some sort of interaction with it.
I would love that.
Because at this point, it makes me start wondering, it can't be flesh and blood.
How can it?
Right? It just can't be. Or we would already have something like
especially
it.
The sightings that take place like in the desert and stuff. It's like it's too big of a creature. There's nothing for it to eat.
I'm sure I always go back to this. I always go back to Mount St. Helens, that maybe there really are bodies and maybe all that stuff was real. And it's actively being made sure to be covered up.
Well, you're aware of a lot of Sasquatch sightings in when that happens, that there's also sightings of UFOs.
Yes.
So I still like to believe that Sasquatch is just an alien's pet, right? And like when you see them, it's a UFO.
For a walk.
They're stopping for a bathroom break. They're letting their pet out to use the bathroom, and then they
when you see a trucker walking his dog.
Yeah, and then it gets back in the UFO and they take off, and that's all it is. It's a Wookiee. It's a pet. That's what it is.
I think Glimmer Man is American or any researchers, but that's the outfit that they wear so they could sneak up on Sasquatch.
Maybe it's like it's the intergalactic dog catcher.
Yeah, they're studying Sasquatch through their Glimmer Man suit. So they got to stay hidden from it.
I don't know. Let's hear about some scientists.
All right, yeah, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll be talking about some crazy scientist stuff It's very disturbing. It would be awful that your research or that your inventions and your ideas of trying to change the world for free energy or better healthcare could cost you your life, folks. Let's jump over there to it. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. let's see if we can't get through this without me coughing and losing control down here. We'll do our best. As I alluded to, I'm going to be talking about some more of the strange, I guess you could say strange deaths is the only way to really put it. These people were involved in research, right? Just your average everyday researchers. And apparently, when they pass, there's a little mystery surrounding some of it. For those of you that have been listening for a while or have even gone back and caught some of our old stuff, you'll remember, I believe Kyle did a segment on Stanley Meyer, the man behind the water car, right? And if you remember, he was poisoned, or, you know, it appears so. For those that haven't listened, you can go back and listen. It's a really interesting thing. And it's one of those stories that, for all of us conspiracy-minded, which everyone listening probably enjoys a little conspiracy here or there, it makes sense. It makes sense that maybe he had learned something, maybe he had found some information out, and, you know, it was fixing to upheave the world. I mean, the idea of doing away our dependence on fossil fuels completely and free energy. Like Tesla worked on the idea of completely free energy made up by whatever it is that makes it up. Imagine what that would be like. Imagine having the ability to power your vehicles and your home and everything in it for free. It was just there. You just had an energy collector, whatever it was, and that's the way it was. No more fossil fuels, no more anything. I mean, it really is a utopia that we would all strive for. But with that utopia would come an entire collapse of our economy worldwide. Global economy would be shattered, right? And not like that's a bad thing. It might be a really good deal for us to get that energy. And it would be rocky at first, I'm sure. But we make our way through like we do everything else. If there's one thing that we've known, the human being is extremely resilient, right? We find a way. We're so adaptive. It's unbelievable. So along those ideas, you can imagine that some people out there, some nefarious types, would be looking to quiet this down. You don't want that out there, right? And not just energy. As this has gone on and as we've learned over the past few years, people in the medical field, right, they're, you know, they may be doing some tests and running some research on things that could either stop, prohibit, or even advance some nefarious things as well. So this all comes from different walks of life in this scientific realm, but a lot of it has a little things to do with things that would be game changing for us as a civilization. The one that always jumps out to mind to me actually happened here in Texas back in 2003, a person named Dr. Robert Berghoff. Now, and I'd remembered this and then completely forgot until I had read some of this stuff up again. Dr. Berghoff was involved in studying the flu and the epidemics of the flu, because back in 2003 here in Texas, we had the center of like a flu epidemic. It was pretty rough back then, and back, you know, and that's been a hot minute back, right? But it was pretty rough. Well, Dr. Berghoff was actually doing research into not just the flu pandemic or epidemic or whatever, but into gene mapping. From what I can gather, he thought, along with several others, that there's a way genetically people are disposed to catching certain things. And if you could alter your gene, now this is of course probably way back, you know, we're talking like this is CRISPR ideas way on in the future, but imagine being able to alter your genetic code to where you were no longer able to catch a cold or no longer able to catch a flu. You were naturally immune to it. Now I know it probably doesn't work that way because there's going to be changes and things, but who knows? Who knows what they'd come across that we are unaware of? So either way, Dr. Berghoff was just strolling, right? He's a biochemist. He's there, like I said, Texas Medical Center. He's just cruising along like it's no big deal. Somebody runs him down in a van, it is said, that ran over Dr. Berghoff and killed him walking, just ka-thunk, thunk, and then took off. They never found the person that ran over him. They never caught him, never anything. Smoked and gone. That's the way of the whole deal. Fled from the scene. People on the scene said that it appeared as if the van, as driving, swerved across to make sure to hit Dr. Berghoff, which is, maybe it was, who knows, right? Were they swerving to miss something else? There's all this speculation, but it would be kind of odd if that's what ended up happening, is maybe Dr. Berghoff was onto something. There was another doctor, This is Dr. Benito Q. Now, Dr. Benito Q was a specialist in, he studied HIV and AIDS research, okay? Dug into it, trying to figure out everything about it. And from what I can tell, was making pretty good leaps and bounds in finding out a way to extremely, like, halt its progress, if not end it altogether, right? Like, done. Now, this is in Miami is where this took place. Actually, Dr. Benito's lab was in, I believe, the Miami Pharmaceutical School there in Florida. So either way, what was going down is Benito left, comes strolling out one day, I guess probably to head home, and is found, his body's discovered out in front, beaten to death. And the story goes that, I don't know what it was that they had seen, but people, I guess, had gathered up witnesses that they said that there were four men dressed in all black, and they were running, carrying something when they left, but running. Now, for the people that reported that, apparently during this case, it was non-existent, right? They were just like, no, that's not what happened. It's also said that it's in the records on the autopsy, I guess, that it was like, well, Benito died of heart problems. So it's almost like maybe they tried to cover it up, or maybe was, you know, the beating didn't kill him, but the beating led to him having a heart attack. I don't know. It's a very, very strange thing, right? But it makes you wonder. And then us knowing now, at this point we're at in our lives in this world, and knowing what we know now about the things that have happened in the past, let's say health-wise, we know that there could have been some shenanigans, and maybe this person knew there was some shenanigans in some other things along the ways, and had, of course, to have been quieted down. That doesn't work, not only stops there. Microbiology is apparently a pretty spicy thing to be involved in if you're looking to end your life early, right? Like, maybe y'all don't want to go into that, or if you do, stick to the just standard right down the middle microbiology. You jump over to Russia, early Moscow, right? Or back in Moscow. This is back in 2002, I believe. I want to say early 2002. Like, I want to say it was January, February, like the first part of the year. Two researchers, right? These two doctors, Dr. Vladimir Korishkov and Alexei Brushlinsky. Now, both of them were microbiologists, and both of them were killed within like 2 weeks of each other. Yeah. So Brushlinsky was a member of the Russian Academy of Sciences, okay? And like I said, all the study, and who knows exactly what they were studying on. So Alex was a member there of the Russian Academy, and then Vladimir was the head of the Department of Microbiology at the Russian National Medical University. So both of these men, not only were they good friends, but both of these men were deeply entrenched in microbiology in Russia. Now, we can speculate all we want to of what we know about Russia. And for me, and for all of those listening that are my age and older, growing up in the Cold War was a bit of a shake. We legitimately had rocket drills, right? Like, I remember being a child in third and fourth grade, and we would hide under our desks in case of attack. Like, they indoctrinated us with this fear of the Russian monster, right? Like, this giant Russian beast is just waiting to attack the U.S. at any minute. As we've gotten older, it doesn't really seem like that's what was going on, but either way. So if you're working for this beast, and now we know after, you know, you talk about, you watch the documentary of Icarus and all the things that Russia's been involved in, is either with microbiology or just the changing of the human body, right? Like, they go all in, and you know, that's their vibe, right? So you can imagine that these two doctors may have learned or know of something that they shouldn't have found out about. So Brushlinsky on January 28th was attacked and beaten to death, and they believe, of course, it was a robbery. Okay, you could kind of go along with that, except for 2 weeks later, Korishkov, same thing, same exact thing. 2 weeks later, beaten to death. Yeah, attacked and beaten to death in the street. Both of them within 2 weeks, and from the way it sounds, the attacks didn't even happen that far apart physically, not just on the map, or I mean, not just on the calendar, but physically. So, and look, it might simply be wrong place, wrong time, right? But there's two ways you can look at this life. either nothing's a coincidence or everything's a coincidence. Either way, it's kind of disturbing, right? Either way, doesn't really play out of this whole deal. Fascinating. And like I said, when you start looking at a lot of this stuff, things start popping out to you that you're like, what the heck is going on? Here's one that happened here. I say the name, Dr. John Mullen. Now, this one is very, very interesting. Dr. Mullen was, this is an old school fella here. Dr. Mullen was born in 1927. Okay. He had a bachelor's degree in physics from the University of Berkeley there in California in 1950. Then he went on to go to, I believe it was MIT. And I believe he graduated from there in the 50s too. And that's where he got his PhD in nuclear physics. So this fellow was decent at math, right? Like he's okay. He's a decently smart guy, right? Jokes, folks, jokes. So what Mullen was good about is nuclear reaction study. That's what he wanted. And apparently this fella was the dude, the OG. He made a ton of discoveries in this atomic nuclei study of what was going on. So I guess one of his biggest achievements was the development of this theory that explained nuclear matter under these extreme conditions. So like, he was studying what would happen when you would find like at the cores of stars, like after they exploded, this giant whatever would be there, that energy. The same thing is he was more worried about not the damage or what, how the nuclear bomb or nuclear fusion works, but he was more worried about the energy in the aftermath of that explosion in the core of it. So he was trying to study more of that. And apparently he ended up coming up with a thing called the Mullen equation, and it's used, right? This is an important, like, I guess, scientific tool for them to help better understand the properties of this matter in nuclear reaction. So this fella's all in, right? He's a teacher. He does all this stuff. Taught at several universities. I know he for sure taught in at Berkeley, where he was originally there at school. Taught a bunch of that. Was a great mentor. This whole thing. Did all this. Was digging into, and I'm sure it was leading up to, this energy thing. Now, here's a funny part, too. He also worked as a nuclear physicist at McDonnell Douglas Research, okay? So for those of you that don't understand or don't know McDonnell Douglas, they're just a, they're like a huge military contractor, okay? And they do, you know, like, I always think McDonnell Douglas is engines and planes, all the stuff. You can look up all the things that they did, so you know that they're probably in the know and rubbing elbows with the DOD and these things this whole time. So you jump forward, no telling what he found. Like I said, we don't really know. But in 2004, Dr. Mullen unexpectedly died. Nobody really could figure it out. They're like, what the heck had happened? So initially they were like, we don't really know what was going on. He was working for Boeing at the time. They found out that someone had poisoned him. Someone had put arsenic into a glass of water that he'd been drinking from, and it killed him. So they start looking into it. They, right then, instantly, right that day, people are looking, what's going on, this whole deal? Well, he had a girlfriend named Tamara Rallo. And right from the jump, they were like, she killed him. She's the one that had to have poisoned him, right? So they go to talk to her. I think the next day, like they talked to her that day, whatever, they go the next day, she's dead. She too is dead, okay? Now, they didn't really disclose any of this, that whether her death was, whether she was killed or whether she killed herself. They didn't do any of this stuff on this whole deal to release it. Now, this took place, of course, in St. Louis, where this whole thing was popping off. So Dr. Mullen, they chalked him up as death from a homicide, waited for the long well. What they don't really, they're not really 100% sure, right, of was it suicide or was it suicide? Did he do a suicide? Was he killed? Was it accidental? They're not really sure, but they tried to nail it down as, okay, now it's a homicide. She killed him. And now she killed herself. That's it. Done. Okay? Done. So how it kind of went down is he was feeling bad. He was feeling sick, all this stuff. They rushed him to the hospital. That's where he passed away. The toxicology report confirmed that it was acute arsenic poisoning and that his body was actually filled with it. And they were still investigating it. And if still, as far as I know, they've never really closed it. They just said, we think she poisoned him. He died. And now she's dead. And that's an open and shut case. And we're moving on. For those of you that have listened for quite some time, it sounds awful familiar, like a lot of other things, right? Like when you start talking about Marilyn Monroe and how easily it was to get rid of her. When you start we talk about Stanley Meyer. You think about how easy it is to brush these away. I think of this. Police departments and investigators are swamped, okay? They are hammered full of people. There's just so much work that they can't get done, okay? Covered up with it. So they're looking, and this there's no fault of their own. It's like everybody at work. They're looking to try and close as many cases as they can. So if it is this cut and dry, and this is the way it looks at, why would you look into it any further? Why wouldn't you go, she poisoned him, then she killed herself, and let's move on. Close the case and move on, which just sounds like what they did. That's just human, you know, what we do, whatever. That's just how we end up doing these things that we do at work. To no fault of their own, maybe they didn't think to look into it. And it's not until put some years on it to where you can kind of get an idea that allows you to go back and look. It's not the only one. Howard Johnson, also known as Rory, was an inventor, and he was born in Elgin, Illinois. All right, that's where he comes from. And this is back in the 70s. Back in the 70s, Rory built a thing called a magnetron. So what this did was it took light-activated cold fusion and a new type of magnetic motor, and he built this crazy, like, laser-powered motor. This prototype said that, now, the motor itself weighed 475 pounds, okay? But it produced 525 horsepower. So they said that they tried it out, and they used what was called deuterium. They used 17 ounces of this deuterium, and they mixed it with some other stuff, right, before they had to put it all. This is kind of how they, like, I want to say it was a couple pounds worth of stuff that they mixed in to put into this, however it was before this recharge took place, and that this motor would push a bus 100,000 miles on that one little bitty fuel up with that little laser motor in it. It was so cool that Rory put on a little demonstration for it. And while there, one of the men that worked for Greyhound Bus was actually there and saw the motor work, went back and told the folks from Greyhound at Greyhound, said, this is what we need. And it is said, allegedly, that they were like, we want it. Get one together, put it together. We're going to put it in a bus and we're going to test it out. So like I said, this is all before, this is all, you know, prior to, I guess, really anything at, you got to imagine back in the 70s, this being a big deal. A cold fusion, the way it sounds, like a laser activated or light activated cold fusion element in this whole deal. Okay. So he's working on this and getting it down. And there's a lot to it. Look, if you're a physicist, you're going to really get off on some of this and go read it up. You can go dig into it, this whole thing. What's very odd about this is, they said Rory died of a heart attack at 53 years of old age. But when they did the study on him, when they went ahead and cut him open, checked him out, the autopsy revealed that he was perfectly healthy, that there was no cause that could lead up to why he would have a heart attack. They couldn't explain it. They're like, there's no reason that he should have passed. Absolutely none. Now, there's, like I said, this isn't the only one. You talk about someone else that shouldn't have passed. Ari DeGeis. Ari DeGeis worked, you can pretty much say his entire life, to nail down not just clean energy technology, but affordable clean energy technology. That's what it was. The technology he was working on was something that he wanted to break away completely from fossil fuels, right? He wanted to find, and he was working on something that was this real thin, like, material that would allow, I guess, atoms, the way they talked about it, in electron currents, to produce a very, very constant power at an extremely low voltage. So an extremely, I guess you could say, energy efficient alternative to what we deal with now. So the wild thing about this is he was found unconscious in his car at the Charlotte Douglas International Airport there in North Carolina in November of 2007. And when they took him to the hospital, somebody just found him, they took him to the hospital, they said it was natural causes. And they're like, nope, it's natural causes. Looks like he had heart failure. The exact same thing. They did the autopsy. There was absolutely no reason that his heart should have stopped. In fact, he was in such good health that they said that DeGeist was planning to secure funding for going to Europe because they were going to fund the technology that he was actually working on. So they, as far as I know, it kind of just stopped right there, because it always makes you wonder, where did all this information go, right? Again, not the only one. There's another person named Dmitry Petronov. Now, Petronov was born in Moscow in 1953. Now, say what you will about Russia, I have, right? But imagine being born at that time, like close to this, growing up around the ideals of the space race. With the whole thing in Russia, like you would be just focused on that. And if you were a scientific kid, this was your greatest idea. So Petrov worked in robotics. That was his main gig, right? Like he loves physics and technology. That's what we're going to make. We're going to work on this thing. But in the field of robotics, he became like the man, the dude over there. He was really working on, y'all are going to like this, autonomous underwater vehicles. So, and of course, you can imagine, I imagine this was probably back in the, you know, 80s and 90s, probably when this all came down, but it may have been earlier as he was working on it. But he had an outstanding career. Then he was also digging in on trying to find ways to harness the power of the sun, these solar panels, right? These are the things that he was looking for. That led him to something else. And what that led him to was plasma batteries. So plasma batteries and his design was basically an earth-shaking storage technology that he had built. So he could store and release massive amounts of energy extremely more efficiently than old traditional batteries. And with that alone, I mean, imagine being able to charge your phone, anything that's battery-powered, and instead of it lasting hours from use, it may last weeks because of this battery change, this one battery change. So again, that changes everything. It changes consumption. If you had everlasting batteries, or at least batteries that would last a ridiculous amount of time in anything, just set on that and think about that. But like I said, he began working on this in the late 80s, early 90s is when he went to firing around on there. Same exact thing. He went missing. From what I understand, Petrov decided to go for a walk one day, decided he was going to go down to a bakery there in Moscow, walked into the bakery, never came out of the bakery. Nobody knows where he went. Up and vanished. Like Kaiser Soze, just gone, right? Of course, again, we're talking about Russia. We're not really shocked about the whole thing. We know these things happen all the time, right? People just kind of go missing. We'll jump back over here and we'll talk about Dr. Eugene Malov, all right? Now, if you've not seen any pictures, I say look him up. Dr. Eugene should have probably been in the films. He played the scientist, the mad scientist part very well, okay? And again, you could kind of understand why. He received his bachelor's in chemical engineering from MIT in 1970, all right? Imagine being the wild man back then. Then he went on to get a master's degree, and then he went on to get a PhD in environmental health sciences from Johns Hopkins. So that's what this dude was really into. And again, he was really interested in cold fusion, which seems to be where everybody wants to go, which is room temperature fusion, which is the craziest thing to think about, is to actually have nuclear fusion at room temperature. Like, there it is. It's just no big deal, about as warm as a light. I can't even wrap my head around that. So he dug into that, trying to find alternative energy sources. So it seems like once you get to kicking over those rocks, there's a real problem. So the story goes that on May 14th of 2004, while, like I said, he'd been doing all this, digging into cold fusion and the controversy surrounding it and trying to end up using it and pretty much change the world, he died. Now, the story goes that he was visiting a rental property that he owned there in Connecticut. And while there, someone attacked and killed him, that he was basically beaten to death. Now, they dug into his murder. They investigated it, heavily investigated it, like seriously did some work on it, and no one has ever been charged, and there's no leads, and it's 100% unsolved. Now, that could just be just a coincidence, right? That's all it was, an unsolved murder, and it moves on from there. But it's awful funny that it's still what he did for a living, what it was tied to, and what he was basically leading into. It's what got him killed, possibly. It just seems awful. I can't say fitting, but looking, and this is just scratching the surface. There's literally hundreds, folks, of these scientists that have gone and done this. I'm going to leave you with one more. The scientist, Dr. Don Wiley, okay? Dr. Don Wiley, first of all, he reminds me of Bill Nye. If you see a picture of Dr. Wiley, he's going to remind you of Bill Nye. And I'm like, dude, this I'm down, right? When Bill Nye starts talking, I'm down. Here's an interesting thing about it. Dr. Wiley was involved in, I believe, like the study of germs and anthrax, I believe is what it was. He was big in I guess, I remember as a kid, the anthrax thing being a deal. So he was kind of, and when I say being a deal, people would mail each other. Well, some people mailed letters to judges. They mailed letters to a lot of officials. I remember people dying or getting sick from all this and this white powder in the envelopes. This has always been a thing. He was studying this, okay? He was really studying biochemical medicine and really digging off into this stuff. Then he just basically sounds like he just went missing. And at first, now, here's what happened. He went missing. Like I said, they discovered his car on November 15th of 2001. If you back up to September 11th of 2001, we all know what happened, right? It was at first believed that he was kidnapped. It was at first believed that he had maybe been kidnapped by someone because they were going to use whatever he had known or forcing him to do something to try to help it lead to them being able to create another terrorist attack. It wasn't until a month went by that they found his body floating in the Mississippi River. And they were like, what the heck's going on? So like I said, they thought maybe he had been kidnapped. So they start checking on all of this stuff because of where he was. Because he's a high profile guy. I mean, he was a Harvard University teacher. He had been part of all kinds of things. He was easy to find, and he worked for, well, secretly. Of course, anybody, I guess, in the secret set would know. They found out later that he had been doing work for the CIA that was funded by the CIA on biochemical weapon research and by the DOD, which is the U.S. Department of Defense. So there was may have been a little shenanigans going on there. So the story goes on that the FBI and the CIA both got involved allegedly with the Memphis Police Department and pressuring them to wrap up the death of Dr. Wiley and just say it was a suicide. So they said, oh, look, it looks like he fell off the bridge where he parked his car. He must have gone for a walk and then fell. And then other people were like, well, wait a minute. There's a little bit of a barrier on the side he'd have to fall on, which is a little over 6 foot tall. So you're not going to slip and fall in the water. You're going to have to climb up and dive in. Well, they know he didn't climb up and dive in. They were like, why would you go through all that work if you were going to kill yourself in the water? You could just walk off in the river. It's right here. Right there's a parking lot. You walk down and get in the river. You wouldn't park and walk across this big bridge, climb a barricade, and then dive off in it. It just wouldn't happen. And the only reason they threw the bridge up there is speculation. So again, they have no idea how he ended up in there. No idea when he actually went missing. They just know when they found his car, right? So they're not really nailed down on the exact of everything. But again, another one of these odd deaths that occurred to people involved in possible life-changing scientific studies. So I hope y'all enjoyed that. That's just, like I said, scratch the surface. I got several more, and they're not all energy. Some are energy-related. Some are health-related. There's a lot of different. There's so many different ones. I'll just tell you this. There's so many different ones that you can't hardly weave them together. Like, you're just like, why are you taking all of these players off the field if that's what's going on? If that's truly what happened. Now, of course, it's, you know, the world, there's crazy coincidences, like we said, and things happen. But whatever's going on here is definitely something that makes you go, huh, maybe I need to read a little bit more about that. Folks, I hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll bounce these ideas off Big Fizzy and see what he thinks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back.
Yep.
There we go. Crazy stuff. Look, that stuff disturbs the heck out of me. Ever since we did the whole Stanley Meyer thing, all of these stories like this where guys feel dudes go missing, go to the bread, the bakery, vanish. Go over here, dude dies of poison. Oh, this guy's girlfriend killed him, but then she's dead the next day. You're just like, come on, man. Some of this stuff, there's too many red flags for it not to make you go. But like I said, this is one of those times. Either you believe everything's a coincidence or nothing's a coincidence.
Yeah, well, Stanley Meyer's brother. I mean, he's dead set that his brother said that he was poisoned by those yes. Belgian guys.
And the dude's just left.
Yep.
The dude straight up, he went outside, did his collapsion or whatever, and they just left.
You know, and you always hear that there's been a lot of incredible inventions over and throughout time that has been invented, and these people come in, they buy these patents, and they just shelve them.
Yep.
They never use them.
They have control of it.
You know.
Gather them up.
I don't know if the vehicle that could run off of just water is a true thing. I wished it would be. I mean, it would be better for the environment. I know that everybody driving a Tesla or electric vehicle thinks that they're helping the environment, that they're green, but they're not really. I think they actually might be doing more harm than combustion engines.
I mean, you start talking about battery stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
And that was one of the guys that got killed.
I know.
They come up with a plasma battery, right? Like, there's so many changes. I think of it this way. Little things that change like that. Like, imagine what the world would be if all of a sudden there was no more dependence on fossil fuel.
Yeah, right.
Like just a vehicle. If there was one vehicle and then all of a sudden they open sourced that information so everybody with an internet connection could see how it was done. So anybody that wanted to build their own, any car manufacturers could build their own. You know what I'm saying? Like this whole thing. Imagine what it would do to the world.
Yeah.
It would destroy its economy. So those people that live off that like leeches are the guys that are going to fight, you know, those, what are we always talking about? The dudes in the dark, like behind the curtains trying to pull all the strings. They don't want that to happen. So they're going to have to be in the middle of it.
I'm not too worried because I think that an asteroid or a comet will reset the Earth again long before we destroy it.
That's like not where I thought you were whatever. Going.
Yeah.
I thought you weren't too worried because you weren't smart enough to invent anything where you'd get your life taken.
I'm definitely not. Although I did invent something years ago I should have put a patent on.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, so
this guy invented standing in lines.
I can't reveal it because then someone's going to steal it for sure.
He invented standing in lines.
If you meet me at a cocktail party or another live event, ask me what my secret invention was, and I will gladly tell you.
Don't waste your time, folks.
It's not a waste of time. It's very, very interesting. I think it could have changed. I could be rich right now. Very, very wealthy. I was ahead of my time. This was before streaming.
Your hairline.
My hair was there, too. This is long before Hims and all those other sponsors.
Yeah.
You notice all those sponsors left. They don't sponsor the show anymore because I wasn't doing anything for my hair. But we have other great sponsors like Microdose, which is available nationwide.
Yes, Lumi Labs, folks.
To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use the code EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Cam, I think you were telling me something about a dog man sighting.
I got this for you. You're going to like this right here. Folks, for any of y'all up in Illinois, keep a lookout on. This says here, I'll share my encounter on US 20 at Tapley Woods of a dog man over roadkill, which I documented. Says, late evening on a weekend trip to see my parents in Galena, Illinois, 5 minutes from Tapley Woods State Natural Area, driving my cargo van around 50 miles an hour, I passed this rest stop hunting registration area. There's an exit there. On the north of the road going west, I noticed a dark figure stooping over roadkill. It was jet black, and when our eyes met, its white, burning, evil glare shook my soul in absolute fright and knowledge that this was not just an animal, but demonic. So I gunned my old van to the limit, as I feared it would chase me because I could feel the stare from the passenger door rear mirror. I pick up two invasive thoughts, leave and forget. Now, this is something I want to touch on later. In 5 minutes, I was at my parents' home and went to the guest room, closing the shades of a floor-to-ceiling window right next to my bed. I did not think of that experience until I saw an artist's depiction of a canine variant with three all-black and burning white eyes. Says later I found another account from an elderly couple. A black, white-eyed wolf man had run across the road in front of them, driving at night on Blackjack Road in the same Joe Davies County, not more than 20 miles away, 125 miles from the famous Beast of Bray Road incidents, which, might I add, today is Linda's birthday.
Is it really?
Yep. Today is her birthday.
Fantastic.
Says, my brother, who works for the FBI, has also lived in the area with his wife and has said the property security found a dead deer 20 foot up in a tree. I think only African leopards stash their prey in trees, but nothing does that in North America. So I suppose a car could hit something that hard, but the winding roads would never let you get up to that speed, and no reports of a crash. After that, in the winter, 500 foot before a convenience store on the road, I saw a giant all-black dog or a wolf. It crossed very casually, even though my muffler is a bit loud. I caught up with the security just ahead of the wolf and asked if he saw that monster canine in its rearview mirror. Nah, he said. I Googled if wolves were seen in Illinois at the time, only once in 50 years, and if that was a dog, there are strict leash laws and fines who would let that thing out. So, they believe they saw a wolf or a dog man, but it also sounds like this area in the Joe Davies County might be a popping off with dog man sightings.
Man. Why is it that geographically it seems like there's certain hot spots? Like, what is that?
I don't know. It is very strange. Like, it's like they're crawling out of a portal somewhere that they're coming to. What I do like is the fact they say the wolfman is white-eyed. So it makes me think that it's human eyes, like a shapeshifter. Right? If it's white, you can see the whites of its
eyes. You're saying white. I thought you were saying wide-eyed.
White-eyed.
White-eyed.
White.
I got you. Okay.
It's ojos es blanco.
I got you. I got you.
Yeah.
Very. I don't know what the heck the dog man is, if it's even
I don't want to see that. Where we were ranting and complaining about Bigfoot, I want to see Bigfoot. I don't really want to see dog man. I'll take your word for it.
I can get behind Bigfoot. I don't know that dog man's real. I don't know why that is. Maybe because it's new to me and I've been hearing about Bigfoot my entire life.
But doesn't werewolf sound awesome?
It does sound awesome.
It sounds awesome.
I used to always get mad in movies where, like, the werewolves, they were never depicted as being very cool.
No,
I always
thought
that was way cooler than just turning into a bat.
Strahd? Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. In fact, it's so cool that Luke's going to play a character in D&D that's a werewolf shifter.
Shapeshifter.
Yeah,
see? I think he's more of like a tabaxi shifter.
Oh, that'll work.
I'm not familiar with the race, they call it.
Shifters.
Yeah, the shifter, but I'm saying there's like multiple ones you can pick from. Yeah. I'm not familiar with what the ones are. He was trying to describe it to me, and lots of times—
He is Puma Man.
When he's trying to describe stuff, I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, cool. Yeah, I have no idea. But chances are he's right, right?
True. Very, very true.
What do you got planned for the rest of your week?
I don't know. I've been helping my son at one of his rent properties that he's got working on. So I've been over there, so I'm going to be over there doing a little painting and just—
Oh, they're renovating it.
Yeah. Yeah, doing a little touch up. I did some ceiling work and got to paint, got to do all that. So it was a good time to get in there and get the horse around. And then that's about it. That's one thing that I've got really planned. It has got to dry out enough I can mow my yard.
Man, yeah, please kick up some more pollen into the air jet stream for me. Yeah, that's all I need.
I can't get to everything I get ready to plant. It's like a light rain comes through. It's a heavy dew. It's cold. Nothing's drying out. Like, and it's to the point now to where if I don't get on it quick, I'm going to have to hire somebody to come in with like a zero turn and knock it down.
Yeah, and I got St. Patrick's Day coming up at my mom's.
Yeah.
Get ready for that. We always have an annual party. I'm sure you've heard me mention it before on the show. Hopefully, if you guys are all out there celebrating St. Patrick's Day, be careful. You know, get an Uber, get a taxi, have a designated driver and stuff. There's no reason to get hurt and injure somebody else. I'm like, have your fun. Drink your green beers and your green teas. I've seen everybody promoting green stuff and green that. I wonder why that St. Patrick's Day is so popular. There's not one day of the year where everybody's like, you know, kiss me, I'm Austrian. You know, but everybody celebrates Irish.
Yeah, don't forget about Cinco de Mayo, too.
And that's coming up. That's coming up.
Same thing.
They have like taco parties.
We're all
parties.
Irish. Now we're all going to be Hispanic.
Maybe.
That's the way we all do this, right? Everybody, it's all for one, right?
I don't know. Do they celebrate Cinco de Mayo all over, or is it just, I mean, it does here, but Texas used to be Mexico, so that makes sense.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Like,
if you live in Rhode Island, do they celebrate Cinco de Mayo out there? Or is it just really another excuse to get drunk, right? Like, everybody just creates something. Dude,
I love Mexican food. Like, it's one of my top shelf favorites. So, yeah, I'm down. If I can go get, like, fajitas.
Tex-Mex. Tex-Mex? Yeah.
Some
now you're making me hungry.
Right? Fresh tortillas, handmade tortillas.
Right. Well, if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, do not hesitate.
Email or recipes.
We always have, we'll take that too. Email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Don't forget about our sponsors, Lumi Labs. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, just go to microdose.com and use the code EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Also, Athletic Greens.
Whoop, whoop.
If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/expanded. That's athleticgreens.com/expanded. Check it out. That's about all the time we have for this episode, folks. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.